Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
We're going to talk about the recently released General Social Survey poll, which found Americans trust one another less than they have in several decades, perhaps less than ever. Do you trust people in everyday situations? The clerk at the store who swipes your credit card? The people you hire to do work in your home? How about other drivers on the road? I'm Joy Kerdine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, December 9th. By the way, be careful out on the roads this morning in the areas of the state that received snow yesterday and overnight. The winter weather advisory was just lifted at 6 o'clock, and some of those roads, I imagine, are still snow-covered and slippery. We will talk about why we seem to be losing our trust in other people and why this matters and whether anything can be done about it. And we'll welcome your theories at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Joy Kerdine Show or tweet us at Joy Kerdine Show. Our guest is Frank Farley, psychologist at Temple University, former president of the American Psychological Association. He used to be a faculty member at UW-Madison, and we call upon him from time to time to talk with you about issues such as this. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So if I'm reading this right, back in 1972, about half of us trusted other people, and now only a third of us do. Does that surprise you?
Well, in a sense, it doesn't. I think it's important to note that the current poll, where 66% of people were stating you can't be too careful, you know, in dealing with others, it was done in November of this year. So the comparison to the poll was conducted this November. And the comparison is with 1972.
And November is significant because?
Well, I think we're seeing an awful lot of debate about trust out there this year. At the highest level, and it tends to filter down. So there's these accusations that Obama didn't tell us the truth about Obamacare, and people, many people feel that it's become kind of a mess. And there's the NSA spying on, eavesdropping on our phone calls and our emails. The U.S. government is spying basically on the phone calls of world leaders who are our friends, like, you know, the Chancellor of Germany, Merkel, and others. WikiLeaks has been going full tilt this year, revelations of all sorts of behind the scenes things going on. You know, just in general, I think it's been a bad year for trust.
Yeah, but you know, and I understand where you're going, but we didn't. I guess the poll isn't saying do you trust government. The poll is saying do you trust people in your community or people that you meet in everyday situations.
That is correct. But you know, you can create a general atmosphere. We're heavily influenced by the media and what we see and so on. So if we get this idea that, you know, the people we elect to offices and our leaders, et cetera, are not to be trusted, you know, that can then filter down to our everyday relationships. But also, you know, this idea of, you mentioned the clerk swiping your credit card. Well, We keep hearing about identity theft and how important it is to protect your identity. How about drivers on the road? You mentioned that. We've heard this year an incredible amount about texting, and some states are passing laws against the use of a cell phone, against texting while driving.
So these suspicions we have are well grounded in fact.
Well, I think so. again, you know, it might pay to have this poll conducted in another year or two. It would have been good if we'd had that same poll, you know, a few years earlier, not just 1972. But, yes, I think that there's good reason to lack trust. The Internet is probably the single largest change since 1972 in our society and our culture. And the Internet is just a smorgasbord of scandal and revelations and a whole plethora of opinion and viewpoints about things. And so it can make us suspicious.
So are you concerned about the poll's findings, or do you think there's just not enough information to really know if our trust as a society has declined this much?
Well, I am worried. I think we should all be worried, no matter how this and when this poll was conducted. If there is a drop in trust, trust is like a social glue, a connection in our culture, and we have to have it. And, you know, if we're losing it at the personal level, that's bad. I mean, it means that we won't get along as well with other people because we don't trust them. We feel they don't have our back, and so we're on our own. And, you know, society demands that we connect, that we trust each other. And if that begins to erode, we don't know where that will lead. You know, we already have an intractably high divorce rate, which bespeaks to some extent a lack of trust at the personal level. And, you know, we have so many problems of unfairness in our culture, of prejudice, of discrimination, and all of those fuel a lack of trust. So, for example, if we can't trust our criminal justice system, and this year saw a lot of debate about that, particularly vis-a-vis the Zimmerman case, but, you know, that it brought out all sorts of horrific information that African-Americans for the same crime will typically get a 20% longer sentence. That's unfair.
Yeah, and this poll did show, and I'm looking for the exact finding, but it did show that African-Americans were far less trusting than majority whites, perhaps because of that.
Yes, indeed. And prejudice exists, and we have a criminal justice system and a prison system that's just horrendous. You know, the highest proportion of our citizens are in prison of any nation in the world, and it's there's significant racism involved in that. So all of these things go together, I think, to lead us to a state of mistrust. And again, at the highest level, we see that our elected representatives don't get along. They don't seem to trust each other. The Congress has its lowest ratings in years, and they don't seem to trust each other. They can't work together. So we shouldn't expect in our everyday life that our trust is that much higher.
You know, and I'm going to admit something, that I know that the crime rate has actually fallen. And it's not that everybody who steps up on my doorstep to ask me to sign a petition or to donate to something is a criminal scoping out the joint. But I am very, very leery, more leery than I've ever been. If somebody knocks on my door, to the point where sometimes I just don't even answer the door, unless I, you know, I've never seen it. But if somebody were in distress, I might, you know, call the police to help or see if that person needed help. But I don't, you know, I don't trust people enough to even want to open the door.
Yes, and sure, the crime rate has gone down slightly, and it goes up and down over time for a host of reasons. But it's gone down slightly, but not the mass violence rate, that is the mass murderers and the serial killers, the ones we read about that really are scary. We're coming up on the anniversary of Newtown, the Newtown massacre in Connecticut. And it's those things that stand out in our memory and scare us. So everyday crime, I think, doesn't scare us as much as these extreme cases that really scare us, home invasions, for example. And, you know, when an airplane goes down and people and everyone is killed, one airplane, that scares a lot of us. But, in fact, air travel is typically very safe. But that one case has salience. It stands out. And so the mass murders and the serial killings, by the way, have not gone down. And home invasions. So it's the perception of violence, the perception of crime, in a sense, more than the actuality that scares us.
So it's my, it's my theory that at least in part that's what I'm attributing to some of this lack of trust is that we're afraid that we're going to be harmed or taken.
Yes, yes. And we could have a dramatic reduction in crime, but if crimes still get extreme media coverage, the crimes that do exist get extreme media coverage, it still scares us.
Yeah. Should we blame the media like we usually do?
I don't know. The media is us, you know. It's all of us, and it's driven by us as well as by, you know, the media gurus and the media, the owners of the media, if you will. But it's, you know, we seek out things, and we live in a media-saturated world. We can't escape it. And so, again, you know, if we could have a drop-down in crime statistics, but if the crimes still get extensively covered in the media, it's still going to scare us. You know, we tend to think that there may be at least three things that scary media can do to us, that is violence and violent depictions in the media. One is that it scares us and makes us more afraid, as you point out, afraid to open the door, afraid to go out at night in our big cities. A second one is that it may desensitize us to violence. And so we just don't, you know, for some people it just desensitizes us. If they see a crime occurring, they'll just walk past it. For example, there was here in Philadelphia a few weeks ago, there was a blind man who was badly beaten by somebody on the street. And people just walked by, and while he was being beaten, and it was caught on video, but nobody did anything about it to intervene. And the third possible outcome is the copycat, so that somebody might see some heinous crime committed, and then copy that and do it themselves.
We need to take our weather break. And we need to remind listeners that we are talking with Frank Farley, psychologist at Temple University, former president of the American Psychological Association. We are talking about this recent poll that found a record high number of Americans are suspicious of each other in everyday encounters. And we're wondering why this is and why it matters. And we welcome your questions. We welcome your theories. Do you trust most people or not? And why do you think that is? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Frank Farley, psychologist at Temple University. According to a new poll, less than one-third of Americans trust in clerks who swipe their credit card, drivers on the road, or people that they meet when traveling. We are talking about where this distrust comes from and why it matters, and we're welcoming your thoughts and questions about this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And let's take our first caller, John in Madison. Hi, John.
Hi. Well, I agree with both of you, but I think that what is going on now is the general level of fear is extraordinarily high due to our recession, and most people understand that it was enabled by our political system. It wasn't just the bankers. It was the Crime Modernization Act and repealing of Glass-Steagall. But also the NSA surveillance has got everybody that I talk to upset, and the fact that the federal defense propaganda operation blats out that we should fear Al-Qaeda everywhere. But the mainstream media is the main problem. They channel this overriding fear into person-on-person fear. And the mainstream media is a corporate entity that the individual, unless he wants to turn it off, has no choice but to accept their prerogatives. The average person watches 4.5 hours of TV, listens to 3.5 hours of radio. That's a massive propaganda effect. So we're sensitized. If it bleeds, it leads to pedophilia, serial killers. And I would disagree with you, Mr. Farley. The FBI Uniform Crime Report shows that violent crime is down since 1990. The Crime Victimization Survey shows it's down. Violent crime is down since the late 60s. This is a false attitude on the public regarding their fear of the other person. Not that you shouldn't be afraid of person-on-person crime, but it has been going steadily down. It isn't increasing, and it saps the public political will and mind away from corporate crime and economic crime, like crime in the workplace, not regulating it for toxins and chemicals or not having health care for everybody that kills 40,000 people a year.
All right.
You know, or a bloated military budget that eats up our discretionary income.
So, John, is if I'm going to paraphrase him here, we're being, brainwashed and led to believe that we should worry about our personal safety from person-on-person crime, and then we're going to ignore what's really important, Frank Farley.
Well, I think it's all important, you know. We still have high crime. Mass murders and serial killings haven't declined that I'm aware of. And there have been reporting issues over the decades as to who was reporting and where the data was coming from, and that has changed over time. The Uniform Crime Reporting System has changed to some extent over the years. But we still have very high crime relative to many nations. And so, for example, here in Philadelphia, we have usually a few hundred murders every year. We have typically more murders in this one city than Canada has for the whole country, and they have a population of 35 million. So we do have high crime, and it scares people, but it's also the perception. It's what happens with the crime, the immense coverage of it. In the media, all forms of media, and internet is a factor. So, once again, it's the perception as much as the reality that scares us and leads us to states of mistrust. And, you know, the idea of mistrust across the whole spectrum of our culture is serious, it seems to me. We see it in government. John mentioned the whole NSA and the issue. The WikiLeaks stuff, leaders promising things that they don't carry out. Read my lips, no new taxes, for example, or I did not have sex with that woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on and on. We're going to close Guantanamo as a promise, and it never happened, et cetera.
Yeah, so is there any way that American society can regain this trust?
Well, I think it's got to be a multi-pronged effort. For one thing, we have to become more fair in many of our public institutions. The criminal justice system is clearly one where there's unfairness. So we have to deal with that. Robert Putnam, who's wrote a famous book called Bowling Alone, was arguing that we need more social connectedness. And, his argument was that people have stopped, these kind of connections through sports like bowling. And his argument was it's declined and that our social fabric is sort of frayed and we are not well connected as we were in the past. We're becoming more sort of personally isolated, et cetera.
Yeah, so in some cases, we're not even, you know, having lunch with the neighbors. We don't even know our neighbors.
We don't even know them. So, you know, can we work hard at that civic engagement as a more communitarian nation to bring people together? And so to hopefully then eliminate the mistrust that we may have of people who we really don't know well. So the mistrust of the stranger, that person knocking at the door. You might remember in Michael Moore's documentary, Bowling for Columbine, he went up to Canada, and he found that many people don't even lock their doors. He would knock on a door and talk to somebody, and people were very friendly. In one case, he actually opened the door and went inside the house and talked to the person, and the person didn't phone the police or didn't throw him out. He was trying to make a point, you know, about the fortress mentality that we may be developing here in the States due to all of our perceptions of violence.
We are talking with Frank Farley. He's a psychologist at Temple University, former president of the American Psychological Association, about why we are so suspicious, why we don't trust everybody or that many people anymore. New poll finds that less than a third of us think that people are trustworthy. What about you? Do you trust people? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. When we come back after the news, we'll also talk about whether a healthy level of skepticism is a good thing. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about social trust. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Monday, December 9th. We are talking about the recently released General Social Survey, which, according to its website, is widely regarded as the single best source of data on societal trends. And this poll found that Americans trust one another less than they have in several decades. Only one-third of those surveyed agreed with the notion that most people can be trusted. That's down from half of those surveyed in 1972. We are talking about why we don't trust each other, and we're welcoming your questions and your theories at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Frank Farley, a psychologist at Temple University, former president of the American Psychological Association, a former faculty member at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And let's take another caller who's been waiting, John in Rhinelander. Hello, John.
Hi there. I've had some experience with trying to do phone calling. I volunteered to phone call for the Democratic Party for a few years, and I found out that we only got people with landlines, and furthermore, most people screened their landline calls with an answering machine first. The people that we actually got, it was a very small sample of the people out there.
Yeah, and so
I can't believe that any phone polling nowadays has any statistical accuracy. And the other thing we don't trust is psychologists or psychology at all. It's just for dispensing drugs mainly.
Hey, do you trust people like you used to? Do you think that people?
I trust my friends and my neighbors. I don't trust media, right-wing media, that the doctor quoted right away, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't want to turn this into we don't trust polls and we don't trust psychologists. The poll is, and but anyway, we can talk a little bit about that. But maybe we shouldn't trust this poll, Frank Farley.
Well, every poll can be criticized, yes. And you ended the last segment talking about healthy skepticism, and I think that we should have healthy skepticism of this in every poll. However, they have attempted to deal with the issue of landlines versus cell phones. And, you know, you can access cell phones through what's called random digit dialing. And so they, in fact, in the details of this poll, they talk about how the polling that they do has changed over the period from 1972, taking into account the decline in use of landlines and the increased use of cell phones, et cetera. So it didn't seem a particularly bad poll to me. It's okay, but I don't think that we can really take any poll to the bank necessarily.
Right.
And one thing about polls is you tend to find fluctuations over time.
Yeah, and I didn't want to turn this into an hour on polling methodology.
No, I think we can, to some significant extent, go with the results that they have found.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned that the polling was done during the month of November, when maybe a lot of us, because of Washington gridlock and news stories, and that we are frustrated with our government. Maybe we didn't trust our government, and that can rub off on us in our personal relationships.
Oh yes, mm-hmm. Yes, for sure, and so yes, it's been an unusual, in my view, year. With the NSA revelations, the WikiLeaks, with the whole hassle over Obamacare and its implementation, and you know, I think that's shaken some people in the general way. But I think at the personal level, it's still concerning that at the personal level, people are showing a significant level of mistrust. And you know, in the long run, that can only hurt us as a culture.
Talk a little bit about why that is hurtful. You said it's the glue that holds us together. How so? And if we don't trust each other, what happens?
Well, life becomes exceptionally complex then. We have endless contractual arrangements rather than the famous shaking of the hands over a deal. And today, that just is gone. And so any contract, you know, we have complicated contracts. We have fine print in everything. We want to research things all the time. Take a look at online purchases, you know, and the evidence that some of the ratings of the services that are online are fake. You know, people rating the quality of services online, turns out that some of them are fake. And so who do we trust?
Yeah.
And that's such an important question. You know, in our personal relationships, we have to have people that we can trust, you know, who truly have our back. And what an awful world we would be heading for if we trusted no one.
Let me ask you, if we are skeptical by nature, in other words, does trust have to be earned from the start, or do we tend to start off trusting people and then eventually lose it?
Well, we in general start off trusting people, and I think that's good. Look, most people are good. they're mm-hmm. wonderful, and we shouldn't, you know, shouldn't spoil the whole, allow the whole barrel to be spoiled by, you know, a few bad apples. There are wonderful people, people we can trust, institutions we can trust, and so it's important. We don't want to become a paranoid nation.
Let's go to Martha in Madison next. Hello, Martha.
Hi. I have a story, and it just happened last week. My son, who's 32, lives in New York, and he was on a business trip in Palm Springs, and he was on the phone with me. This happened last week, and he said, "Mom, I have to go. I'll call you back." And okay, and so moments later, maybe 20 minutes later, he called me back, and he said, "This old woman stopped the car in the street, crying, and asked him to help her get her husband off the floor." And so he went in her car in a strange city, She drove him a few blocks. It took him into her house, and together they got this guy off the floor. And then he called me back, and he told me the story. And I said, Peter, you went in a stranger's car. You had no idea where. You've got to be kidding me. And he said, Mom, you watch way too much TV.
Mm-hmm. And everything was okay, and he helped out this. Nothing happened to your son.
Nothing went wrong.
Yeah.
And he said, she was, Mom, I could tell she was in distress, and she was not going to hurt me. And I was shocked that he did it.
Yeah, I have to admit, I put myself in his situation. I may not have done that, and that can be sad, Frank Farley, that we don't trust people enough to help them in a time of need.
Sure. You know, we've often heard of the bystander effect, people who will not help, will not step in and help. But I have an anecdote myself. I have a student here at Temple University, a graduate student, and he and his fiance got on their bicycles and rode from one end of America to the other and stayed in all sorts of locations and so on, and they had a wonderful time when they found wonderful people who they trusted. So it ain't hopeless. Let's put it that way, and I think Martha's example is a good one. So, you know, the idea of everyday heroism, if we become all paranoid and mistrustful, heroism goes out the window, and helping goes out the window. And we can't have such a bleak future. It will be a non-future. On the other hand, healthy skepticism, you know, is important in many areas. But
right.
And maybe we need to better educate kids along the lines of trust, et cetera.
Let's talk about that after another weather break, whether we can teach trust. We are talking with Frank Farley. He's a psychologist at Temple University, talking about this survey that shows that Americans don't trust each other very much anyway, and we're wondering why this is and why it matters. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question or a story to share. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Right now we are talking with Frank Farley. He's a psychologist at Temple University, about this recent poll that finds less than one-third of us trust other people or think that other people deserve our trust. And we're wondering if you generally trust other people. And, you know, you trust your good friends probably, but what about, you know, clerks at the store who swipe your credit card, or people you meet when traveling, or other drivers on the road? We're talking about why so few of us trust so many. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Other callers, so let's, before we talk about education and trust, let's go to Joan in Williams Bay. Hi, Joan.
Yeah, good morning. As Frank Farley just spoke about the people that you know, incidences, anecdotes about people trusting each other, I wonder if there has ever been a poll taken about the good people, the good trusting things that people do, to balance the poles of negativity between people, you know, that they don't trust.
Yeah, I'm not sure if a poll has been done on. I mean, this poll was asking, do you trust others or not? And the answer was not. But I don't know, Frank Farley, do you know where she's going with this?
Yeah, I do. Well, here we go. Focusing on the negative in our society. And we should be focusing more on the positive. And many of us in psychology have been arguing that now for several years. We need to sort of accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and give more focus to developing our positive qualities, our positive strengths. And I think is a wonderful agenda for the future of America, is to let's focus more on the positive side.
So you think somehow talking about trust in school with young children might be a way to alleviate this?
Well, I would be hopeful. For example, there's the topic of cooperative learning is very important. And can we institute more cooperative learning experiences in the schools where kids learn to work with others? The world's leading authority on cooperative learning is David Johnson, who is probably in your listener area. He's at in Minnesota. He's at Minneapolis, University of Minnesota, and David has done wonders with, and his brother Roger also, wonders at developing cooperative learning programs for the schools. But they're not in every school, and would more focus on cooperation and cooperative learning build trust in our kids?
Mm-hmm.
Empathy, altruism, also, you know, helping others, all of that connects with trust. And so the more of that sort of thing in the schools, I think, the better in the long run.
Gary on Facebook says, and he wrote this yesterday, I think it may be a myth that there was greater trust in the past. I am also not so sure that social media keeps us from personally socializing any more than cars keep us from walking. I would encourage anyone who is concerned about people not trusting others due to their lack of social interaction to go out this afternoon during the Packer game and find some lively people in a bar somewhere and have a few beers and a few laughs. The world might not seem so scary. So that's, I guess, his personal anecdote to this.
Oh, I like it. I think, though, that most observers would say that back in 1972, it was a different world. We had less information about, you know, cheating, behind-the-scenes things, government snooping, etc. And now we just simply have more information. We are just information saturated, and some of that information, I think, can be driving this and fueling this mistrust.
Our next caller is Jerry in Genesee Depot. Hello, Jerry.
Good morning. Interesting, I just heard some woman from Williams Bay call,
mm-hmm.
and I'm about 35 miles from there, and I've got 45,000 miles on bicycles, and I never lock my bike. Wherever I go around southern Wisconsin, I watch it and that. If I got near a city, I might, but I don't ride near cities very much. But I tend to meet people. It's interesting to go into a tavern or somewhere, talk to somebody, find out what they're doing. I've been a banker all my life, and we're naturally all skeptics anyway. But even at that, we've been town of Genesee. We haven't had crime. This is an armed camp out here. Everybody's carrying guns. Women are carrying guns, permits and stuff. But I don't know. I go to Milwaukee a lot, but I am careful where I go. Now, I do lock my car, finally. I don't hear right now. It's sitting outside my house, not locked, and my son's isn't, and his house isn't locked. We're still trusting here. But once in a while, when something happens, you start to lose your trust a little.
Yeah.
We're having more problems, and it's sad in a way. Because being old, I remember days when nobody locked anything here.
Yeah, so. I thank you very much, Jerry, for sharing that. It reminds me this was a few years ago. I rarely locked my car even a few years ago. And I didn't lock my husband's car when I had been using it, and stuff was stolen from it, you know, when it was left overnight. And now I've trained myself to lock my car, but it took a long time, Frank Farley.
Yes. Well, you know, again, it bespeaks how valuable trust is, that it's not hopeless, that trust hasn't totally disappeared in America. Can we bring it back to some extent? But again, it's got to be, you know, against the backdrop of crime and the fact that, yes, healthy skepticism has to stay with us, but let's work toward increasing trust. I come back to institutions because there we can do something. You know, we can change education, religion, you know, used to be a wonderful source, I think, of inculcating trust in others. But, you know, we've had the sex abuse scandals, et cetera, and so that's been, that has imperiled the reputation of some religions. I think that, and government, I think we, the institutions are the, where we can clearly do something. You know, we can do something in education with children to build up a sort of a trust and a resistance to mistrust. It's hard to do it just one-on-one across the nation, but there are certain institutions we can focus on.
You know, we have an interesting call from Josie in Sheboygan, kind of along those lines. Hi, Josie.
Yes, hi. I was going to say that about Iceland, when the financial meltdown happened, the people that were responsible, I just found this out last night on another radio show, it happened in 2012, and they kicked out all the politicians that were involved, all the bank people that were involved. The citizenry rewrote their constitution and wrote things in that would prevent anything like that from happening again, probably like a Glass-Steagall type thing.
Yeah, so follow Iceland's lead, Frank Farley. Kick the bums out and start over.
Yeah, deal with an institution that you can deal with. You know, again, in our country with so many millions of people, dealing with each individual and so on gets very difficult, but institutions can be a target for change. By the way, Iceland had its first murder, I guess, in its history,
right,
if I'm not mistaken, this year. Iceland has essentially no crime to speak of. And so that's a backdrop that's quite different from our backdrop here in America.
Yeah. You know, we just have a couple of minutes left here. I don't know. How do we make adults trust each other more so that we aren't so cynical, so we might help another person in need? Where do we go from here?
Well, I think the concept of giving is enormously important, and generosity. We're heading into the season of generosity. Let's do it. Let's expand it. Let's do more of it. And we'll find that people respond wonderfully and positively to giving. Nelson Mandela was, you know, in a sense is the guru, if you will, or was, of reconciliation, of getting along, and it worked. And so maybe let's just make some assumptions that these other people can be trusted, and let's see how it goes.
Well, thank you very much for being with us, and happy holidays to you.
Same to you, Josh.
Frank Farley, psychologist at Temple University, former president of the American Psychological Association. He used to be a faculty member at UW-Madison. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing this hour. I hope you stay tuned. Coming up, it's our State Capitol Report. We'll welcome back Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter and second-time dad, Sean Johnson, to recap what's going on at the state capitol. And then tomorrow at this time, we are going to be talking with the author of A Word from Our Sponsor, Admin, Advertising, and the Golden Age of Radio. That's tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.